Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Welcome to Suffolk Matters, where all of Suffolk County meets the men and women of Suffolk AME. News, opinions, and insights you won't hear anywhere else. Here's your host, the president of New York's largest independent union, Suffolk AME's Dan Levler.
Welcome to another edition of Suffolk Matters on Walk 97.5 and 94.3 The Shark, where Suffolk County meets the men and women of Suffolk AME. News and views you can't hear anywhere else.
So my guest this morning is Tony Ann Chemi, and also joined by Desiree Freeman. Good morning, Tony Ann. Good morning, Desiree.
Good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Tony Ann, you're a Starbucks barista from the Massapequa Park, recently unionized, which we love. And Desiree is a former Starbucks employee, now working for Suffolk AME. So everybody has some context to what we're doing. But, you know, first and foremost, welcome to Suffolk Matters. This is a very exciting show. This is, you know, something we've been talking about for the longest time, trying to get people to understand what being in a union family means, what it means to be a worker that's protected, that can collectively bargain and everything else. And for the folks at Massapequa Park, yourself included, this is fairly new. This is fresh. This is, and I think this is a wonderful thing. I think we need to see this across industries, across this country, to really try and turn things around and get this massive disparity between CEO pay and the people who actually produce the products. You know, we've got to get those numbers closer. You know, there's this saying that labor is entitled to everything it produces. So if you make Starbucks coffee, you should leave with a paycheck with enough money in there to do everything you need to survive and also buy a Starbucks coffee, which is not cheap, right? So it's my opening rant. And so, you know, Tony Ann, you know, one, thank you so much just for joining us. But I'd like to start just a little bit with your experience in organizing and you know, working at the Starbucks and organizing the folks there and what that was like.
Yeah, so of course, I don't have too much experience, you know, other than this with, you know, labor unions and organizing. I mean, I did some activism when I was in college, but unrelated to like labor unions. So it's not like totally out of the realm for me to be an activist in some kind of way.
Sure.
It honestly, it happened very quickly. You know, when Buffalo started unionizing, I think that they announced it in like maybe like August of 2021. Sorry. I remember I was super excited about it. I was like, this is awesome. I was like sending clips from like their TikTok account to my coworkers, like in a group chat, like, this could be us, guys. And they were just like, they were just ignoring me. And then like every time in my group chat, people would be complaining about things. And I'd be like, you know what we need? A labor union.
Yes.
That would be really cool. And then in October, you know, a good friend of mine now, their name is Carr. They're part of the organizing committee with me.
Sure.
They joined our... they came on and, you know, became a coworker of mine, like in October they were hired. And we became quick friends. And so they had said to me in like December, like, I think that we should unionize. And I was like, I totally agree. Then like by like January, it became like a real thing. And we were emailing with baristas from Starbucks Workers United, like up in Buffalo. And we had, pretty much before we knew it, we had like meetings with them. We were talking to them about things, and then we had union cards, and then it happened all very quickly. By the time that, you know, we were actually like literally trying to do it, it was February, and we started talking to coworkers like on a Sunday about unionizing and trying to get them to sign union cards and stuff. And it took about like a week for us to get. We had, we were told by, you know, Workers United to get about 75% of the store to sign union cards.
Sure.
And it happened very quickly. So, with, you know, within the week, we had 75% of cards signed.
Awesome.
And we were ready to file. But, we, you know, we were waiting because there were some, I mean, I don't want to get into that too much, but there was like some things that we had to wait for because there's a store in Great Neck that had also filed.
Sure.
So we had to wait for them, wait like a couple of days to file because they had literally just filed. So then we filed officially on February 14th. It was Valentine's Day.
Yeah, it's very encouraging to me. You know, I've said many times on this show, you know, that people should look at labor unions. They should look at ways to organize their coworkers, or barring that, leave where they are and go to some company that's unionized already.
Yeah.
And doing that line of work. But it's great to hear how organic and kind of quick this process can be for folks, because I think it's very intimidating. You know, it's people just sitting around like, oh, I don't know, this is going to be bad. And management has a bunch of terrible tricks that they can use. You saw this very,
yes,
much with Amazon, these lock-in meetings where they get everybody in a room and they say, you know, the unions are bad and this is why, and
mm-hmm,
you should be able to talk to me directly and not have to go through a union. And did you realize that unions, you know, charge dues, and, you know, like, so they try and create all of these horrible scenarios and try and intimidate folks into not joining a labor union. But your process, you know, I think should be encouraging to folks, you know, just to be able to have these conversations with your coworkers, come together, sign a few pieces of paper, and off it goes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And I don't think it's like a good measure to be signing like labor, like union cards, like out on the floor of your workplace.
Sure.
So I was like, you know, I was like going into the bathroom and like leaving union cards in the bathroom and being like, go in there and sign the union card and then come out and get and hand it to me and we'll,
sure,
do it quickly where the cameras aren't. And my coworkers would come out, they'd be like, I feel like we're on a secret mission. And I'd be like, we are on a secret mission.
And that's fantastic. You know, I'm sitting here listening to you tell that and thinking, I'm picturing myself at Starbucks years,
yeah,
ago, and all of my coworkers just sitting there like, how do we do this? What do we do to make this better? And at that point, there really hadn't been this growing modern labor movement that we're seeing right now,
sure,
which is really incredible. So at that point, our first reaction was, oh, let's write a tell-all book. That'll be it. That's what'll fix it. And to see you guys now doing the real work and getting this union started, it's, you know, it's really doing my heart some good. It's awesome.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, I think Buffalo deserves a lot of the praise. I know, I don't know if you guys are familiar with Jazz Brezak, I believe,
sure,
her name is.
Right.
But I mean, I haven't met Jazz. I hope, I would love to meet her someday.
Mm-hmm.
She seems incredible, but she was like this Rhodes Scholar,
yeah,
who just like went to work at Starbucks and then was like, this sucks.
This is horrible. Yeah.
Like, why don't we just unionize? And, you know, I think, you know, she's so responsible for so much of this great stuff happening. Because even like I've been at Starbucks for like 2 years now, and probably like, you know, the first summer that I worked there, another coworker of mine, her name is Hannah Taustein, she's also on the organizing committee with me. We had, you know, we were frustrated one day. I don't even remember what happened. And she was like, we really need a labor union. And I was like, yeah, we really do. And so we had talked about it, but this was way before that Buffalo had started.
Sure.
So we were, so I just didn't think it would be possible. And I feel like if we had actually gone through with trying to, you know, unionize our store back then, I don't know if it would have worked out, because, you know, I don't have, like, Jazz Brezak is like this like incredible Rhodes Scholar who's like super intelligent and like, you know, studied like labor history like extensively, and like I, you know, I just know some basic facts about like the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory, you know.
Right.
So like, so I think it was very vital for it to have started when it did with Buffalo, the Buffalo workers and Jazz and everyone that's up there, like Michelle Eisen, and there's so many, you know, wonderful people up in Buffalo that I've talked to briefly. So yeah, I'm really excited by all of this. I really hope that it just continues and spreads everywhere.
Yeah, I really want to see that. You know, and I want to see that across more Starbucks.
Oh, yeah.
But I want to see this in other industries as well, because I really,
yeah,
I really think, you know, you think about Starbucks as a corporation. They'll set policies and say, this is what we want. And they're not out with the workers. They have no idea what it's like in a particular store. I'm sure they go to stores to,
yeah,
see, you know, but those are flagship stores that, you know, they're kind of running and overseeing and whatever. And they don't know the day, you know, the ins and outs of the day to day and what it's,
yeah,
the realities of, like, you know, living on Long Island and trying to get by on Long Island, and you know, having to open a store at 5 o'clock in the morning, and you know, yes. like all of those things, it doesn't really matter to those folks because they have spreadsheets that say you're okay, right?
Yeah,
and they pay
exactly.
someone to make spreadsheets that say that you're okay, right? So of yeah. course they're going to get the result that they want, because if they don't get the result that they want, they're going to fire that person and hire someone new, and that person will make the report say what they want it to say. So the only thing that we can do, I think, as a nation of working people is to represent ourselves, right? Not
yeah,
on an individual basis, but to come together collectively and bargain these things out.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that, I mean, at least for me, it feels like there are like so many horrible things that are constantly happening like in the country. It just, I often feel so hopeless. And so for me, like being part of this and like actually, you know, making changes and being part of this movement, like I feel like I'm like taking some control back.
Yeah,
and I think that a lot of other baristas who are part of this also feel the same way. Like it feels empowering to feel like, you know, it doesn't have to be horrible and terrible all the time.
There's more of us than there are of them.
Yeah.
I mean, by a lot. So if we want to come together and affect change, we absolutely can. And that's, you know, I mean, that's the encouraging part of this story. And, you know, Desiree, you know, you had some experience working at a Starbucks, and it was a non-union Starbucks, and I
yes.
know it wasn't always awesome. And, you know, maybe it's helpful for folks to have an understanding of what it is that makes a job like that so difficult to, you know, I mean, I got to assume wages first and foremost,
oh, yeah.
but like work rules
so
and, yeah.
I was at Starbucks about 7 or 8 years ago. So this was before the minimum wage being around the $14, $15 range was even a thought. If you found a job that was $15 an hour in 2010, that was incredible.
Right.
So when I was working there, we were making $10 an hour, and it is barely anything for the amount of work that you have to do. I was an opener. I was also a trainer and a shift at the end of my Starbucks run. So I was one of the shift supervisors, kind of a floor manager function. And you don't realize how hard it is to, one, be there constantly and maintain that quick level of service. Starbucks employees are known for their exceptional customer service.
Absolutely, yeah.
For giving the customer exactly what they need in that moment. You know, if you order the wrong thing on accident, I'm still going to remake it for you and give it to you. Right. So there would be a lot to manage between juggling that customer service aspect, juggling just the sheer volume of people coming into the store at any given moment, which fluctuates based on where your store is located,
based
on the time of the year. We're running specials like the dreaded Frappy Hour. That was always the worst time of the year.
Right.
So working there would be, you know, you kind of just really, really felt like a cog and very, very unappreciated.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. You're just a number in thousands and thousands of Starbucks employees who are putting up with the same thing. And there are people, you know, at that point really trying to get in because it was still regarded as one of the better companies to work for. This was when getting tuition reimbursement was not something that happened at a retail job or at a food service job. So, you know, somebody like me in college would see that and be like, oh, I can get college credits or a break working at this place
right.
and make money at the same time.
Right.
And you go in and you read the fine print and it's not actually for you.
Yeah.
And they make sure that you're working limited hours.
So you don't reach that threshold.
Exactly.
And yeah, no, you know. So when we talk about management in the context of Starbucks, we're not talking about, you know, in the union world, we'll call folks first-line supervisory. So somebody that might be in the store and responsible for opening the store and making sure everybody has what they need while they're working, but they're also working. We're talking about the corporation of
yes.
Starbucks versus the folks that are working. And so,
yes, because the shift supervisor might be a manager, quote unquote, but they are not at
management.
The top of the chain.
No,
yeah.
They're not even close to. And, you know, they have just a difficult time trying to change culture in a store that an employee that's just coming in and you know, serving coffee. They would both have the same amount of difficulty because there's all these layers of bureaucracy just to get to the guy at the top, so to speak, you know, and it's by design. So Tony, and let's talk a little bit about, you know, how things are now at that store, now that you guys are unionized. I mean, are you seeing a difference in how your coworkers feel?
Yeah, I do feel like there's a lot of hope for things, you know, potentially being better. I mean, like, we don't have a union contract yet.
Right.
So like, they often come to me and complain about things. And I'm like, unfortunately, like, there's not much that we can do about this right at this very second.
It's a great opportunity to say these are things that need to be in the contract.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So, you know, I'm like, we can, you know, we can negotiate this in the contract. But like, unfortunately, like today, like, you know, there's not much that I can do about this. But, you know, I think there is a lot of hope. Like, I have one coworker who's she's worked for the company for like almost 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so before we unionized, I felt like she was I just felt like she was like always like exhausted and like tired. You know, she's been, you know, doing the same old stuff at, you know, our Starbucks store, you know, for like almost 20 years. But now, you know, like, even, you know, yesterday I worked with this woman, and she was like, you know, ever since that, you know, we spoke, like, me and her literally, like, about, you know, all of the things that are wrong with this company, like, I can see it now. Like, I can see it. I understand why we did this and why, like, you guys pushed so hard for this. So I feel like she, like, specifically has, like, this new, like, energy to her. Like, she knows that, like, change is on the horizon. And like, that specifically is like exactly what this is for. Like, sure, like, I'm a 25-year-old, I'm sure, like, I have the rest of my life, I could do like whatever else, but like, you know, this woman has been with this company for 20 years.
Right.
She has children. Mm-hmm. You know, like, who knows, she could be doing this for another 20 years. Like, who knows?
Right.
So like, you know, there are so many people who are like, Starbucks is, you know, for teenagers, and I'm, you know, I don't, you know, it's not, because the store opens at 5 a.m.
Yeah. Let me tell you how much I hate this, you know, Starbucks / fast food and like unskilled, what they like to call unskilled, which used to be essential about a year ago.
Yeah.
That's unskilled. I hate that argument, because if these jobs are for teenagers, well, teenagers are in school.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
you're
getting food and beverages and all, you know, or doing your shopping in all of these areas where you're telling yourself these people deserve less money than is necessary to stay alive, because, you know, it's just a starter job and they're in high school. No, they're not. No, they're not.
It's not true.
If you're shopping and high school is open and there's people working in the store, it's not high school kids, because they're in high school, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I mean,
and
so,
it's not college students either. Yeah, people don't realize the demographic of people who work there. I worked with a lot of parents, single parents, who need assistance. They need help. They need to make sure that there's childcare, that there's somebody looking out for their needs and their very unique needs, because it is not a monolith of employees.
Right.
They're not all students, high school, college, or otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
It is it's a wide array of individuals, and I think that we like to perpetuate this myth of unskilled labor to...
I don't know that we do.
No,
But I know they
but,
do.
But the collective, the other we, the them, and, you know, it makes it so that you can justify poverty level wages for full grown adults, and even if they weren't adults, contributing members of society who are working for a living, who deserve the pay that can help them survive regardless of what their identity or demographic is.
But you look at things like what the Starbucks Corporation brought in revenue last year, right? So that's value back to, you know, stockholders, shareholders, stakeholders. That's value back to top leadership. You know, the CEO probably got a very nice paycheck last year. Then this same corporation that's making all this money and justifying poverty level wages and working conditions that are that they're not workable, and probably staffing levels and safety issues, but we'll get into all of that as time goes on. And they turn around and say, well, you're not valuable enough to actually afford a cup of coffee at this location. You know, maybe, and I'm not even sure, maybe they let you have a cup of coffee on break. But the fact of the matter is, these very large corporations do so much to give you the impression that they're this wonderful organization, they're great for the world, and they're doing these great things, when in application, maybe they're not. And additionally, they employ, you know, we talked about Amazon having their little tactics of locking people in rooms and trying to bombard them with anti-union messaging. Now we have Starbucks saying, hey, listen, you know, if your store unionizes and we decide to give everyone a raise, we're not going to give you a raise. Why? Because the law says you can't, because you have to bargain it. And when raises are bargained for in a union situation, they tend to be higher than what the boss just decides to give you, because the boss is going to pad things in his favor. You know, oh, we might get some less customers, you know, it could be a supply issue with tea. We don't know. So we're going to give you like a little bit, but not much. And when you collectively bargain, it's very different. And you can see over the course of someone's career or life inside a union job, anywhere from 30 to 50% more money is made in a union household than a non-union household for doing the exact same work. So, you know, while Starbucks is going around and trying to intimidate people around the country and say, listen, if you unionize, you know, we got this big raise we're going to push out to people and you're not going to get it. Yeah, you are. And you're going to get more and you're going to have a safer job and you're going to have the right amount of coworkers there. And not for nothing, that means their product will be better. I could guarantee you when the Starbucks by my office is unionized, they're going to see me every day. It's going to be, you know, but that's the way I look at the world. That's the way I want to participate in this world. And I like to know that the people that I'm you know, buying goods and services from are going to have enough money to go on and do what they need to do, right? Keep the lights on, feed their kids, take a vacation, have a normal life. Otherwise, the way my brain works is these people are not getting enough and they're going to need more. And so they're going to need more from government services, which is where we originate, you know, AME, you know, government workers, municipal workers. And so having folks work at a place like McDonald's or Starbucks or any of these things that people traditionally consider unskilled labor slash, you know, less deserving of money than other people, which is bonkers, that's going to increase tax costs. Because they're not going to be able to keep the lights on without assistance. And so they take assistance, and that assistance comes in the form of pooled tax dollars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. The other insidious thing that you see is, you know, on the union busting angle is these places, McDonald's, Starbucks, Amazon, these kind of corporations, they convince you not only that is the union bad and they're not going to help you, and if we give something to our people that aren't in the union, we're not going to give it to you. They also constantly release these pamphlets and these hiring materials and these posters that say we're a family. We are mm-hmm. one big team. We're partners. Mm-hmm. We're all together in this. And they kind of convince you after you're there for a while and you're getting really just beaten down by the amount of work and the way that mm-hmm. it is, you start to believe it. And you're like, of course
and
they
now
have
you don't
best
value
interest in
yourself,
life.
Right? Yes. And you have to look yourself in the mirror and say, I'm going to go in and be abused today mm-hmm. because that's the only thing I can do. And that's, you know, I think that's awful. I think it's despicable. And I think they know what they're doing.
Definitely.
Yeah. So we talked about, you know, the process of organizing. We talked about, you know, the hopefulness that you guys feel now. And what do you see for the future? You think, you know, for yourself or other coworkers that you're going to be out there and support other folks in the Starbucks world that are looking to unionize their stores? And how do you feel about, you know, just generally what the future holds for you guys?
Yeah, I mean, moving forward, we have to elect our negotiating committee. That's what my store decided to do, elect a negotiating committee.
Sure.
We haven't done that yet. Anyone who's ever tried to organize knows how difficult it is to get everyone in the same room.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people, you know, I have, you know, some coworkers who are like, we really should be all in the same room. But, we do actually have a lot of minors
right.
who work in my store. So, you know, a lot of the minors are like, I can't stay up that because our store closes at 8 p.m.
Right. And it's open every day of the week.
Yeah.
So there's no way to shut down the store so you guys can have a meeting. Makes sense.
So, you know, we've been trying to work around that. But we do have to elect our negotiating committee. Mm-hmm. And then we have to actually, you know, start the process of negotiating with Starbucks. But, you know, I think Buffalo, I think one of the stores in Buffalo, there's like seven now, I think, are trying to negotiate right now with Starbucks, but they're doing like service level bargaining, mm-hmm. I think is what they call mm-hmm. it. So they're just saying no to absolutely everything.
Yes, they're not bargaining in good faith.
Yeah, and I think they're just going to do that for as long as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, hopefully as more stores start the negotiation process, you know, they start, you know, saying yes to some things because, you know, how long can it possibly go on of them just saying no to everything?
They're going to hope that they don't get public outrage. And I think the public should be outraged.
Yeah.
These are human beings that are just trying to survive, and they're trying to provide a product. You know, and you say, well, you know, I don't necessarily need coffee to survive. Water I might need to survive, but I don't need coffee to survive. But this corporation is pushing out huge amounts in profits every single year.
Yeah.
People are using this service. And one of the main reasons they're making as much money as they're making is because they're disadvantaging everybody in every store that they're in with their work rules, with what they're paying, with how they keep your hours under a certain limit. So it looks like you've got an opportunity, but you don't really have it.
Yeah.
It looks good in a news article like, hey, if you work for Starbucks, you get X. But you don't actually ever get that.
Oh, yeah.
I completely sympathize with you, you know, knowing, you know, dealing with the negotiation process in Suffolk County obviously is going to be very different than what it's like for you and your folks in dealing with the Starbucks Corporation. But the fact of the matter is it's an interesting process.
Yeah.
But it's not primarily an intellectual exercise. There is a real end goal there. And the real end goal obviously is to get a contract in place that protects everybody and makes it so that you have enough staff, that everybody gets paid properly, that, you know, the hours are reasonable and that there are, you know, there's the ability to get a day off, you know, and all of those things. So
there's so many things that, you know, I would like to be in our contract, and my coworkers are like, I think that you're thinking too big. And I'm like, you know, I mentioned to them that I wanted Labor Day off, and they were like, there's no way that Starbucks is going to give us Labor Day off. And I was like, I want Labor Day off so bad.
It's impossible until it's done.
Right. Well,
I was like, no, I'm gonna try.
There used to be no national holidays, none.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you know, now we have a bunch. And you, to turn around and tell retail workers, no, you have to work. Well, listen, if I've got to work, then I want double time because everybody else is off, and you barely pay me as it is.
Yeah. And you know, the thing with holidays is that we do get paid more on holidays. But they severely understaff on holidays. And then, like, I worked Christmas 2020, and my shift supervisors were like, who wants to go home? Anyone want to go home? And they never do that.
Right.
Only on holidays they do that. And I was like, no, I'm going to stay because I'm getting time and a half.
Right.
And they were like, I really think that some people should go home. And we were all like, no.
And there will inevitably be a rush because people are still out. There always is a rush.
Yeah, but, you know, I was telling my coworkers that I wanted us to have Labor Day off. And, you know, they were like, why would we get Labor Day off? I was like, well, this was a day for workers.
Exactly.
And I think that we should take it back. I think I was like, why should, you know, blue-collar workers should be the only people who get Labor Day off? I was like, why can't I get Labor Day off?
You should be able to get Labor Day
off.
And
I was like, I think that it's time that we take it back.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think it's, you know, we can try. I'm going to try.
Listen, if they give you the day off and they say anyone who wants to work and they incentivize you to come in, maybe they can keep the store open. Otherwise, people will not get coffee that day and it'll be just fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right? They'll live. There's K-Cups.
Yes.
Right? So
you can get your beans ground in store.
Yeah. In the last couple of minutes that we have here, you know, I had a few questions I wanted to ask of you and just, you know, try and get some understanding of where things are with you guys. But is there anything that I missed or anything you want the world to know about this process, about being someone who newly, you know, joined the labor movement, joined the organizing effort, and, you know, is looking forward to getting contract negotiations going? And
yeah, so, I mean, you know, it seems much more daunting than it really is. You know, it's really hard to believe that, you know, we've come so far in my store. It hasn't even been, I mean, I guess it's been a couple months since we started, you know, the process. But I mean, you know, it was rough. You know, a lot of my coworkers were upset with me. I didn't tell some people because I thought that they would be, you know, I thought it was incredibly important that we keep it, you know, on the down low for as long as possible. So like anyone who I thought would be, you know, willing to tell my manager or like the district manager about it.
Mm-hmm.
We just didn't tell. And, you know, so it is hard because, you know, a lot of them are still upset with me about it and upset with the, you know, the organizing committee about it, you know. So like, so I've stepped on some toes in the long run. So,
right.
You know, like that's difficult, you know. But, you know, I just feel like if Starbucks workers can do it, really anybody can do it. You know, I, you know, it feels mean to be like you're going to step on some toes, but like you're not going to be able to make any kind of change in the world without upsetting some people. So,
well, listen, you know, think about the history of the union movement. You know, you talked about the Triangle Waist Shirt Fire.
Yeah.
People died to get those changes to happen. Right.
Exactly.
Yeah, sometimes you might inconvenience some people. Sometimes you might say, well, I'm not sure if I'm going to talk to so-and-so because they may try and blow this whole thing up, and we need to be successful. And these are sacrifices. They need to be recognized and rewarded, but they're sacrifices nonetheless.
Exactly. And I'm, you know, really big into history, and I, you know, I studied sociology and history in college and, you know, gender and women's studies. And, you know, I love social movements and activism. So, you know, sometimes you're gonna make mistakes, and that's okay. You know, people are gonna be upset with you, but you know, I really feel like this was a long time coming. I mean, you Google labor movement, and like there's articles that are like the labor movement is dead. It's been dead for decades. You know, I saw so many of those when
of course.
You know, and so the labor movement is not dead anymore.
Right.
You know, it's back. It's in full swing.
Yeah.
You know, I would love to see Walmart workers and Dunkin' Donuts workers and like even like. I was at Hershey Park over the weekend, and like even like amusement park workers, like that would be awesome to see like Disneyland workers, like like striking and like forming labor unions. Like
there are far too many corporations across this country that make their money by disadvantaging their workers.
Yeah,
and they're more than willing to do it. They know damn well what they're doing, and they rob from their employees to make their company look attractive to investors, to, you know, boost CEO pay and give out bonuses and whatever to a core group of people that don't produce the actual product.
Yeah.
There has to be a rebalancing. And again, I'll say it again, there's way, way, way more of us than there are of them. So if we decide to come together and have this fight, we're going to win.
Exactly. And it's what the working class people deserve.
Sure.
It's been too long.
Sure. Listen, when the New Deal came out and minimum wage came out and established in this country, it was equivalent to, I think it's back in 2010, it was equivalent to $27 an hour. That's higher now, right? So it's probably more like $33 an hour, but I'm just speculating. So anyone listening, if you're making less than $27 an hour, that was minimum wage back when they first established it. And these rights have been systematically eroded over time. Unionize. And Tony Ann, I want to thank you so much for joining me this morning. Desiree as well. Loved getting all the context and the background information. Really just a huge congratulations to you and your whole group over there. And I can't wait to see more Starbucks unionize.
Thank you. Hopefully there'll be more coming up, hopefully.
Yeah,
fingers crossed.
I am hoping.
Thank you for letting me join.
Absolutely. And to our listeners, we'll speak to you next week.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Now's the time for a great deal on a new Honda. It's time to take an adventure with rugged capability and commanding style. Check out the Honda Ridgeline, Pilot, Passport, or CRV. For a limited time, well-qualified buyers can get a 1.99% APR on a 2025 Ridgeline or a 3.99% APR on a 2025 Pilot, 2026 Passport, or 2025 CRV.
See dealer for financing details.